All right, so let's start. I'd like to call the August 25th, 2020 Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors General / Workshop meeting to order. Time is 7:02. Mark, do you want to go over quickly what the rules of the road are in terms of providing comment and stuff?
Yep, give me 1 second here. Okay, we have the options for everyone to call the township on the township phone number. I have that forwarded to my phone. You can also chat. I have the chat window open, and you can use the raise hand function, and we will unmute you so that you can make any comments that you would like. So we have different options for you, and hopefully that works for everybody, and we'll take everyone's comments when we are able.
Great. Thank you, Mark. So we want to start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yep.
Okay. We'll try our best. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty
and justice
for all. Getting better every month. Okay, let the record reflect that all members of the board are present, as well as staff, which includes Mark Hudson and Carol Schuler, our engineer. Our standard announcements: township meetings are recorded for the purposes of preparing the minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. This meeting will also be recorded by the teleconference provider. So, Mark, can you just explain the hybridization of the meeting and also executive sessions?
Yep. Thank you. So the executive sessions, the board held an executive session on July 29th to discuss legal matters, and then on August 3rd to discuss personnel matters. Our meeting on August 4th, our usual general meeting, we had the flood, tropical storm Isis. So the township was, most of the township was without power, and many people were dealing with the water. So we canceled our August 4th meeting, and we decided just to push most of the agenda items from that meeting to our workshop meeting here rather than to schedule a special meeting during the month. We felt that we could handle the items on the agenda at this meeting here. So as normally we don't do general items at our workshop meetings, this was a special circumstance due to the tropical storm and the flooding and power outages that the township was experiencing during the August 4th day and evening.
Great. So our first agenda item tonight is solicitor appointment. Mark, can I be so bold as ask if you could just give us the 10,000 foot view of how we went about this?
Yep. So in March of this year, we found out at the very end of the month that we were losing Andy Belwar as our solicitor. The new company, then Siena Law, was able to keep us on as a customer and provided us with a solicitor. But in the interim, the township decided to send out an RFP. We received proposals from 11 different firms, and the board and I reviewed those proposals, and we came up with a list of 5 firms that we interviewed. We did about an hour interview with each of those firms, and then the board will make a decision tonight on what firm to move forward with.
Great. Thank you, Mark. So I'll open the floor to the board members if anybody wants to make a nomination.
Okay. I guess, I don't guess this is Dan Orff. This is Dan Orff. I would like to propose, or is it propose, nominate? What's the right word I should use?
I move to appoint.
I move to appoint Grimbain and Thatcher as our solicitor firm.
I'll second.
Second. So we have Dan Orff making the motion and Marla Hexter making this seconding Dan's motion. And in specific, we would be having Peter Nelson, who is with us tonight, as our solicitor, and he is with Grimbain Thatcher. Any discussion? Great. All in favor of appointing Grimbain and Thatcher as our new solicitor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any against? Okay, the vote is unanimous. Peter, welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Very honored to represent you. I look forward to working with all of you.
Same here. That brings us to our next item, which is administrative actions, the treasurer's report. Mark?
Yep. All right. The treasury report. Now, this report is from July 31st. This is when this was put together. So the cash balance in the general fund as of July 31st is $1,620,830.30. The cash balance in the sewer fund as of July 31st was $491,537.43. The checks in the general fund for the month of August total $48,792.24. And the list of checks in the sewer fund total $27,896.37. Keeping our eye on the earned income tax in light of the COVID-19 situation, as of July 31st, the township is pretty even with where we were at 2019. So we improved again. And as I said, I thought we would because the state had allowed people to push back their final report for 2019. But with that being said, now we are getting into the time. So the next, so every quarter, there's employees that are employed by themselves or there's some other employees that pay their earned income tax quarterly. So far we have received the fourth quarter of 2019 and the first quarter of 2020 for those individuals. So the next quarter will be the quarter that included March, April, and May, in that time frame. So this is where we may see the bigger impact on our EIT. So we're continuing to go with the numbers that were being provided by Berkheimer, suggesting we plan on an overall decrease in our earned income tax between 15 and 20%, which again is roughly $45,000 to $65,000. But we're keeping our eye on it. We will have another report next week on the earned income tax. Also during the month of July, we submitted our liquid fuels audit to the state. So that's the treasurer's report for tonight.
Thank you, Mark. So do we have a motion to approve the list of checks in the general fund as well as in the sewer fund? I'll make the motion that we approve the list of checks in the general fund in the amount of $48,792.24, as well as the sewer fund in the amount of $27,896.37. So Chuck Yizer making the motion.
I'll second. Terry Bird.
Terry Bird seconds. Is there any discussion? All in favor of paying the list of checks in the general and sewer funds, say aye.
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 Aye. Any against? Great. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Okay, public comment on agenda items. Mark, I assume you'll let
Chuck,
us know.
Chuck, I do not see anything. If anything pops up, we'll
loop back.
Loop back.
Okay. So that brings us to the next item, which is the review of the subdivision and land development plan for the Rhodes Farm tract, which is 28 Simmons Road.
So, Chuck, can I, this is Carol Schuler with Value Engineering. Can I help walk us through that?
Yep. Thank you.
So on the agenda tonight is consideration of final subdivision approval for the Rhodes subdivision. This is an application by the Rhodes Family Partnership. Should the board decide to grant this application this evening, it would include certain waivers. Let me take a step back and describe the project. This is a project on Simmons and Little Road in the township. There are two existing lots. The first lot is zoned R1 and it's on Little Road. The other lot is a large farmstead that is partially zoned LI and the remainder is zoned R1. This proposal will merge those two tracts into three new tracts, putting a dividing line down the Scioto Creek to divide the LI portion of the farm tract from the R1 portion of the farm tract and provide an access to Little Road. So this plan, I believe, was discussed at the Planning Commission meeting and briefly discussed with this board at your last supervisors meeting. The plan request includes certain waivers. That would be section 145.22C and D, requiring minimum parkway width for Little Road and Simmons Road. That's a waiver that's being requested. Section 145-41, requiring sidewalks, curbs, and storm sewers along Little Road and Simmons Road. Section 145-42B, requiring street trees along Little Road and Simmons Road. And section 145-47B, requiring existing buildings to comply with minimum building setbacks to accommodate an existing farm building on lot 3. The proposal does not include any new improvements or construction. The conditions of approval include adding a note to the plan that states a public trail easement is hereby offered to the township within the floodplain area along the Scioto Creek for the placement of a trail and related amenities, the size, composition, and location of which shall be determined in the sole discretion of the township, provided that if the easement is located on lot 3, which is the lot that's currently zoned LI, it will be sited within the 200-foot setback area due to floodplain constraints on that lot. The township shall be entitled to accept this offer at any time and in its sole discretion. This motion of approval also includes a deferral of section 145-48B of the Subdivision and Land Development Ordinance, requiring certification of adequacy of private wells for lot 3. Conditioned upon a plan note being added that at the time the landowner applies for a building permit or land development approval, such adequacy must be certified. I believe the applicant and his representative are on the meeting call today, so if the board has any questions of them, this would be the time to ask.
Yes, Greg is on the call.
Yes, I'm here if anyone has any questions.
This is Chuck Geiser. I don't have any specific questions. I think I've been watching the meetings that you've been involved with, and you know, I appreciate your working with the township and you know your patience in terms of the fact that this has stretched longer than we anticipated. But I'm assuming you've read through everything and you're on board with what is in all the approval letters and your commitment to the township.
Yes, we have. We reviewed everything and it's acceptable to us.
Does anybody else on the board have any questions for Mr. Gress? Okay. Hearing none, I think everything that I see here, unless I'm wrong, is consistent with what was discussed in Planning Commission. And I think their recommendation to us was for approval. Is that correct, Mark and Carol?
That is correct.
Yep.
Okay.
Chuck, is there any, I'm assuming there's no comments in Planning Commission. If anybody's here, if they have anything, I guess I'd say speak now or forever hold your peace.
I'm not seeing any comments from the public.
Okay.
Okay, so at this time, we open the floor to the board to make a motion to approve the subdivision application.
I'll second then.
Okay, so Marla Hexter made the motion to approve the subdivision application for the Rhodes Family Partnership for properties on 28 Simmons Road and 128 Little Road. And Dan Orff has seconded it. Marla's motion. Is there any further discussion? The board. Hearing none, all in favor of approving the subdivision plan as discussed for the Rhodes Family Partnership, say aye.
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 Any against? Hearing none, the vote is unanimous. Great. Thank you again, Mr. Gress.
Yes, and thank you all. I know it was a little difficult working through all of this, but I appreciate you all working through it. It was great help. Thank you all.
Yep. Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay, that brings us to Carol continues with report.
More from the township engineer. Carol Schuler again, Value Engineering. I have two items on the engineer's report. The first is the Goshen Road sidewalk project. The township received 10 bids for this project. The lowest responsible bidder was G&B Construction with a base bid of $99,535. The alternate bid for extending the sidewalk to Grimley was submitted as $9,201. We have discussed that cost with the contractor, and he is agreeable to a change order that would reduce the alternate cost to $5,670 should the board wish to include the alternate in the project. A detailed report and bid tabulation have been provided to the board for consideration of award, and a significant portion of this project is funded by the MONCO 2040 grant program. The other item on my report this evening is sewer line inspections. Sewer Specialty Services, Inc., or SSSI, were in the township last month to video inspect the 100 series of lines and manholes. This is an extension of work performed under the Small Projects Grant of 2018, with money remaining. During their visit, SSSI video inspected all 100 series manholes and mains. They identified a leak in manhole 141. They resolved a partial blockage between manhole 150 and 151. They removed a root blockage between manhole 401 and 402. And they identified a leak in a liner in manhole 153 that will be addressed by vendor ART as a warranty repair at no cost to the township. The manhole 141 leak will be grout repaired when SSI returns, in addition to other known collection system leaks. An invoice was received for that work completed. The invoice for cleaning and video inspection work completed to date is $24,874.40. The line items and prices are consistent with the signed CoStars contract from March of this year. I would be happy to address any questions you have on these or other township engineering matters.
So, Carol, just to clarify, all this expense was covered under what was left over from the manhole lining grant we received in 2019.
Yes, ma'am, that is correct.
Great, thank you. So I remember we discussed this last year, so it's good we got some good use out of that extra money.
Yeah, this is and this is Dan Orff. Carol, if you'd be so kind as to refresh everybody's memories as to what the alternate plan is. I mean, I know what it is, but I think it'd be good for people to they may not know what we're referring to when you're talking about the alternate plan related to the sidewalk. I know it has to do with what the county came back and asked us to do, some additional check into whether we'd be willing to do some additional things. So I figure if you can spell that out for people, that'd be great.
That would be my pleasure. So the original project was to install sidewalk from the approximate location of an existing bus stop near the intersection of Goshen and Grimley, but actually on Goshen, to install sidewalk from that location up to the top of the hill. And when the county reviewed the preliminary design, they asked that we add sidewalk to the Grimley side of that corner so that we would have an accessible walkway to also cross over towards Grimley. Thank you, Mark. That's very helpful. So if you look at the drawing that Mark just put up, the alternate is the area that's highlighted in yellow at the top, and it's also highlighted in yellow at the bottom there. It makes it a little easier to see. So that's another accessible ramp and an extension of sidewalk so that you can go in multiple directions with accessible walkway at that corner.
So, and this would add, in relationship to the entire project, it's a fractional amount, but it is dollars and cents, an amount as well, right?
Yes, sir. So it's the cost, the base bid for the project is $99,535. This would add what we've negotiated down to $5,670. So another 5 or 6% to the project cost.
And the advantage, the reason why the county wanted this is for the reasons you laid out, plus I guess they perceive it's perceived as being adding safety to
the points in the county review, as I recall, was that this sidewalk not only provided access for the existing bus stop, but that it provided access towards the playground at the top of the hill on the other side of Grimley. So this further promotes interconnectivity of the neighborhoods and connection through to that playground area. That's my recollection of part of why the county requested this.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carol, for your summary.
My pleasure.
Carol, this is Marla. I know that we have an obligation to pay, I think it's 25% out of pocket from the township. Do you estimate there'll be anything left over from that? As I think it's currently about $22,000. Do you feel that we are going to expend all that money, or might there be some left over from that portion to go towards this alternate?
I think that you're going to have a couple of thousand towards the alternate. I don't think you'll cover the full cost of this alternate. So if I did some big round numbers that said, you know, we're probably looking without the alternate at spending about 122 or 123,000. The original grant estimate was 125. With the alternate, we're going to be closer to 128,000. So we're going to be about 3,000 over the original grant estimate. So we'll be circling on either side of that number, depending on the choice the board makes tonight.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is if we're obligated, we have to spend at least 22,000 and change, no matter what happens. So it would be nice if we could do that and not pay the full $5,670. But it still sounds like it's going to cost us potentially maybe four
Yeah. You're probably looking at an additional $3,000 to $4,000 in that ballpark. Yeah.
It does seem like it's a worthwhile thing to do when we have the roads, the sidewalk. You know, we're in the process of doing it. I would say, even though it is additional money, I can see the benefits of it as spelled out by the county. But I do know it's money that has to come from somewhere, but.
We should have money in the line item, in the sidewalk line item that we did put in to cover this whole project. If we do include the alternate, I think I went a little high on that line item. I know we'd need to save money overall too. But also with the county asking us to do it, it would probably look good for future grant requests in the future if we can try to swing it.
This is Chuck Yeiser. I have no issue with funding the base as well as the alternate. Anybody who spent time there, this is a fairly heavily used intersection. There's lots of kids, even outside of times where you see buses coming in and out, and lots of people moving around. So I think the alternate is a significant improvement to the project.
There's something in the chat. Do you want to identify yourself and be in the official record? Because there's no name attached. Or are you just giving us a comment?
Yeah, we have a comment from iPhone. So if you can type back your name and address, that would be great. Dana Valente from 231 Goshen Road. The bus stop is also on the other side of the road. So help provide, you know, access to the bus stop.
Well, I mean, we're already there doing the work. It does seem to be a shame to not do the rest of it.
I definitely concur with Chuck's assessment as well. I do think, and what you just said, Marla, is we're already in the process of doing the work. And it seems to make sense to do this now, even though it costs money, and especially if there's a little bit of excess that was put in that line item initially that we might not feel as much pain doing this alternate.
Hi, this is Noelle Halter. Mark, just for clarification, could you give the number that the township needs to pay towards the 25% of our towards this project?
Yep. So the new numbers then would be total project. The county would stay at their $102,533. And the township would be around $26,250, $26,500, rather than the $22,500 that we have to spend.
Now, is this amount that the contractor has sent us, is that they're not going to come back and say, oh, sorry, it's going to cost us 10% more? They're committed to pay to do the work for that amount.
I think that's to me, Carol Schuler here.
Yes,
so, yeah, I spoke to the contractor when I saw that the numbers were so much higher, the unit prices for the alternate, and the contractor explained to me that he was trying to protect himself in case it was a separate project that he had to remobilize just to do the alternate after he'd done the other. So I verified with him that it was the intent to award it all at once and do it all at once. And with that understanding, that's how we got the adjusted prices that are shown in change order number one. And he signed that. He's committed to it. If you accept that change order, the township signs it. Those are the prices.
I'm really referring to the total cost. I mean, we're not going to, that's it. He's committed to doing it for that amount, plus the change order.
He is committed to the unit prices that are in the project bid. And what I do is I estimate quantities and then I add a little fluff factor so that the goal is to not have overruns, to not come to you and say it costs more. It's a construction project. I can't give you 100% guarantee that nothing will change or there won't be something unexpected come up. But at this point, I have no reason to expect that those costs would be exceeded. If anything, I hope we come in just slightly under.
And is he proposing to start pretty soon so this work will be done before winter?
Yes. He was initially going to start this month, but the award got delayed. So I'm going to have to reconnect with him on schedule. But he absolutely understood that we wanted to do that this season and this year, and he was prepared to do that.
Thank you.
This is Chuck Geiser. Carol, is it a fair statement to say that since this area was excavated, a road was put in the somewhat not too distant past, and then it lasts, 30, 40, 50 years, that the chances of us hitting some immovable object are probably reduced?
I think they are much reduced, but I never rule out some surprise in a construction project, and I don't want to mislead anybody. But I agree with you. I would not expect any big surprises on an area that you know, was constructed in the late 80s.
Right. And this is Terry. Mark, can you remind us again, what was budgeted for this project this year?
This year we had $130,000 in the budget for the total project.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, this has been going on for pretty long, these discussions. So, and I think we could all argue other areas of the budget or where to use the budget. But at this point, these small changes seem like they could be a big impact. And there's some people have been commenting on the safety issues in that area. So I think at this point, it makes sense to move on, manage the project. No overages, please. And carry on.
Yeah, it's a worthwhile addition. It's probably worth it.
With that said, let's get the train out of the station here. I'm happy to make the motion if that's all right with everybody.
And I will second that.
All right, so I move to award the Goshen Road sidewalk construction to GMB Construction Corp., who's the lowest responsible bidder with a base bid of $99,535. I also move to authorize the alternate option to install additional sidewalk and accessible ramp to GMB Construction Corp. in the amount of $5,670. I believe that's the number Mark gave us.
Yeah.
So Chuck Geiser made the motion. Noel seconded the motion. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of awarding
Chuck,
the sidewalk.
This is Peter Nelson.
Yeah. Peter.
I think you should award the alternate bid and the amount actually bid, and then deal with the change order after the fact.
Okay.
I think that's legally what you have to do.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Thank you, Peter. So let me revise my motion. We'll just go through it one more time. That we move to award the Goshen Road construction there to GMB Construction Corp. For a base bid of $99,535. And I also move to authorize the alternate option to install an additional sidewalk and accessible ramp to GMB Construction in the amount of $9,201. Noel, do you still want a second?
I still second, yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Motion
just one question, Peter. Will we do the change? We'll do the change order at the next meeting then?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just procedural.
Yep.
You'll look at the lower price, but I think you have to award what was actually bid.
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you, Peter.
Before we leave.
Can we then go ahead and accept the change order, or do we have to vote on it before we accept it?
If Carol is good with the change order and it's all ready to be approved by the board can move on it right now, yes.
Oh, so we can vote on it now?
If every, I don't know where we are with the change order. If Carol says everything is in place and it's ready for the board to review and vote on it, then yes, you could, or you can just, you can wait until the September regular meeting.
I mean, it's 1 week away. Mark, do you need a little time to get things in order, or are you okay with?
Okay with either. You've seen the change order.
I guess my question is, can we send the change order back before we voted on it?
I think we're all right to do it on Tuesday.
You prefer to wait a week?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to slow anything down.
Your call. I'm good.
Yep. We'll just wait till the first.
Great.
Go ahead, Chuck. I had a comment from the SSI part going back to Carol's report.
Go ahead. I had a question for Carol, but you can do the comment first.
Okay. So the question was from Crystal Gilchrist. Would these repairs that Carol mentioned that SSI was going to do, will they help stem the infiltration into the sewer system of stormwater? Yes, they will help with the INI that the township does receive in the sanitary sewer pipes.
My question was for Carol regarding the sewer inspection. You had mentioned there was a root ball that was in one of the lines. Is that also? I assume that means that the roots somehow fractured the pipe and got in, or did they come in? Did it come in some other way?
No, it means they penetrated the pipe. But my recollection, it was right near where a lateral entered. So I actually have that on the list for them to go back as one of their potential grout repairs. So we have a leak in Marion that we know we need to repair, and two manhole leaks that need to be grout repaired. So there's a few repairs to get done, and that will still be funded by the small projects grant. So okay. That's really good news for us, and it reduces the INI into the collection system.
Great. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We have any additional questions for our engineer before we move on? Hearing none, we'll move on to the township manager's report.
All right, hold on a second. What are you guys seeing?
I'm seeing your PowerPoint with the agenda.
Are you seeing the first slide or the?
First slide, yeah.
Shoot. All right, hold on 1 second.
Yeah, I was seeing the Loctite document a little while ago, but.
Okay. Sorry, give me 1 second here. Okay. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I got a call from Blue Sun LLC, which is the Loctite storage facility. They're working with the Rhodes Family Partnership to purchase the LI section of the property that we just spoke about a couple of minutes ago. So before we get moving too much, and they submit a plan to the township, they're looking to submit a sketch plan. I wanted to get the professional consultant's review fee escrow agreement in place. I spoke with Carol and Eric at the time, and both of them thought the security amount should be in the amount of $10,000. So Mr. Black from Blue Sun LLC was acceptable of that and has signed the professional consultant's review escrow agreement. So if the board wills and approves it, then we'll begin moving forward with Lucent LLC.
Any questions for Mark? I have one. The amount, the $10,000, is to cover our expenses related to township engineer costs, right?
Township engineer and legal fees.
And legal. Okay. That's the, yeah. I must have missed that part. Great. Does anybody have any further questions for Mark? It looked like a fairly straightforward agreement. I'm assuming this is sort of a boilerplate we've used.
Correct. Yep, this was given to us by the solicitor to use.
Okay. So they're just they're just looking to expand out or make their site a little bit bigger, or this is over on the light industrial section. Is that right?
Correct. Looking to purchase the light industrial section. So it would be the lot 3 in the roads subdivision.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah, it seems pretty straightforward. So I just wanted to get it in the right place in my head from a geographic position. Okay.
Any other questions for Mark, or can we move forward and make a motion on this? All right. Anybody want to make the motion? I'll be happy to do so if nobody else wants to. Hearing nobody chime in, I'll move to approve the professional consultant's review fee escrow agreement in the amount of, I thought it was $10,000, Mark.
$10,000.
$10,000 between Lower Frederick Township and Blue Sun LLC, otherwise known as Loctite Storage Expansion.
I'll second. Dan Orff seconds.
Chuck Geiser made the motion. Dan Orff seconds. Is there any discussion on the board? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the professional consultant's review fee schedule, say aye.
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 Any against? Great. The motion carries unanimously. Mark, just for the record, I think you also indicated you had planted the seed with Loctite about the solar farm and seeing, right? You had mentioned that to them.
Yep.
Which was was something that came up during planning commission, which is great.
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, so the next item is the mutual aid agreement for the fire marshal with Perkiomen Township. Presented this at the workshop meeting at the end of July. The board asked me to verify that the agreement was written by their solicitor, and it was. It was written by their solicitor, Jürger Daler Alabach. So, and I did get their agreement that they did with Limerick, and it is the same agreement, just with Limerick's name on it. So everything seems right where it is, just a mutual aid so that they can help each other. If they have to go to court for each other, they have the agreement in place.
Any questions for Mark? Hearing none. Anybody want to make a motion to approve the agreement?
I'll so move.
Marla Hexter makes a motion to approve the mutual aid agreement between Lower Frederick and Perkiomen, and Noel Halter seconds. Any further discussion on the board? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any against? All right, I believe the motion carries. It's unanimous.
Okay, the next item on my list is the Park and Rec Plan ID tags and QR code. We had a very nice presentation from the Park Board on the Plan ID tags that you can go up to with your phone. You can, you know, hold your camera on it. It brings you to a website that gives you all kinds of information on that. Pam and Greg Wright have been spearheading this project, and it seems like a very good project. They're going to start, the plan is to start in the Village Center Park and then work out. There was a cost estimate that they gave us of $985 to begin this project. That's the initial fee, is to get the logos and everything ready for the little plaques. From there on, the cost will go down significantly every year, and there's a small cost for every additional plaque. But the initial cost estimate of $985, I think we'll get them about 30 ID plan IDs to start with. We did receive a $125 donation already to this project from Marla Hexter. So that brings the initial cost of the project down to $860. I propose that we use some money from our park development fund to fund this project. Right now there's about $2,900 left in park development. That would leave us with $2,000 in the park development fund. And it seems like a very good product that will also give the park board an opportunity to take donations that they could then link to these ID tags. It seems like they could do a whole lot with this and be a nice addition to the park system and the nature area in Village Center Park. And when the rain garden at Cuddy Park gets finished, they'll be able to add things there also.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Any questions for Mark? Okay. Personally, thank you, Marla, for the donation. And also, thank you, Park Board, for the excellent presentations. I know, I'm guessing most of us, if not all of us, attended them. Would somebody like to make the motion to basically approve the expenditure of funds for the ID tags?
I still move.
Okay.
So Noel Halter has made the motion to, and Dan Orff has seconded.
Yep.
Is there any further discussion?
I don't have any discussion. I just want to echo what Chuck said, is that the park board, and I think Greg Reich in particular, put a lot of time and him as well in his presentation and this project. And, having volunteers who donate their time is really a treasure in a small township like ours. So it's thank you to them in particular and to all the volunteers who donate their time.
Great. Thank you, Marla. No more discussion. Everybody all in favor of approving the expenditure funds for the plant ID tag, say aye.
Aye.
Any against? Great. Motion carries unanimously.
Okay, so the next item that we talked about at our workshop meeting was the Village Drive, the curve on the Village Drive. So excuse my non-computer generated drawing, but to put no parking signs along the curve so that we could stop cars from parking in this area, it really decreases the view and increases the chance of two cars running into each other. So what I'm proposing is 7 no parking signs, 3 on the inside and then 4 on the outside. We could get away with 1 or 2 less, but wanted it to be, they have to be every 200 feet. So to make it look even and keep everyone, keep everything in place, I went with 3. 1 would have an arrow pointing back towards the curve. But this is the area that we've put the no parking signs. The total cost of this project would be under $500 to put the signs in place. We would have to update the ordinance after we get the signs up and in place. But this will be the start, and then we can continue from there. This is continuing the project that we started last year with the speed humps and the painted parking areas. So this is continuing that project.
I just had a question for Peter. How much work or how complicated is it to update our ordinance to include this change?
You guys have a codified ordinance with a codified traffic section. It's actually a very easy process to just, it literally should be just adding this road and describing the areas that no parking applies to. So it's actually a pretty simple ordinance to prepare. It's probably the biggest cost is paying for advertising costs.
Of course.
So this is something that we could wait to advertise with something else and try to get.
Yeah, if you have other, especially other traffic related ordinances or changes you want to make, you can wait and do them all at once. The only thing, you know, we have to recognize is that until an ordinance is adopted, if someone violates these signs, you know, we can't charge them with anything because they're not violating any ordinance. That's the only issue.
Peter, this is Chuck Yeiser. But even without the ordinance, the police could still issue a warning or something, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. But they just couldn't issue a ticket or, you know, or any sort of summons or fine of that sort.
So we could think of this maybe as if we choose not to do the ordinance immediately because we're trying to save some money in advertising, we could think of this how they handle, you know, traffic light installation where they put the light up and it's hooded and then it's a blinker and, you know, people kind of know what's coming.
Yes. I'm assuming also this is a township road, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any other questions from the board?
Mark, what would be the time frame for this to occur?
If we get approval, we would get these in the month of September.
Okay.
We have to order the signs and wait for them to get here, but then it's not much to get them in.
And you'd only put the signs in after we go through all the advertising and the whole process, or just put them up beforehand?
We'd put them up, and then the police could give warnings, like Chuck said, and then we'd go for the ordinance.
Will we need an actual, what will we need the officially, is like a public hearing or?
It'll be like any other ordinance. We'll do the ordinance update. We'll authorize the advertise. Then we'll have the hearing or the discussion about it and then approve it. We just have to advertise it because it's changing an ordinance.
Sure. Okay. All I was going to suggest is that now I know it's probably a separate advertisement, but an update from another committee from the ASA was discussing new members wanting to join and needing a advertising and public hearing. So if that's something that we could double dip on, I'm not sure if it's two separate topics, two separate advertisements.
We'll try to double dip if we can.
Okay.
And I kind of like the idea of having like a phase-in period. So police will stop people and they'll know, like, you got off today, but next month you're going to get ticketed. So I think it'll let people get used to it.
Yeah, though I think we should have a target and say, well, look, you know, I don't know, 3 months by the end of the year, we should have an ordinance in place.
Yeah, we can begin preparing the ordinance, and then when we're ready, we can, you know, bring it to you to advertise and then, you know, go through the process. So we can have it ready.
Okay. Any further discussion? Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll so move.
Okay. Noelle Halter makes a motion to approve that no parking signs be placed on the curb of Village Drive. Second?
I'll second.
Marla Hexter seconds. Again, any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of having the no parking signs installed on Village Drive, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any against? Great. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, Mark.
All right, I'm going to take a step back. We were talking about Village Drive. Pam and Greg sent a note you know, thanking on behalf of the park board. Thank you to Marla for her donation, and thank you to the board's consideration and approval of the plan ID signs, QR tags. Okay, so the small update on the small cell facilities. The board requested that I look into the firm in Pittsburgh, the Cohen Law Firm, and get a proposal from them to help us update our small cell facilities ordinance. I did do that. I forwarded that to the board to begin to review. Also, I wanted to talk with Peter while we were here. The small cell facilities proposal from the Cohen Law Group is $5,100 to do the ordinance. And then if there is any overrun in time, they expect it to take them about 17 hours. Then we would be billed at a per hour rate of $300 per hour. So as we have a new solicitor, I did want to just have him give us any, or give us, yeah, any, no, brother, any experience that he's had with this to let the board know what we have now with a new solicitor. So, Peter, did you have anything, have you had experience with the small cell facilities updating those ordinances?
Yeah, I mean, I know Dan, not very well. I know Dan well. Many of our clients have done work with Dan. Many of our clients have been involved in consortiums in Bucks and Montgomery County that hired Dan to help them with not only wireless issues and cell phone issues, but also dealing with contract franchise negotiations with Comcast and Verizon. I first worked with Dan probably about 7-8 years ago when there started to be some changes in state and federal law regarding cell towers, and townships needed to start updating their ordinances to come into compliance with these laws and to try to maintain whatever, what control they have over the placement of wireless facilities. I have, as far as what are called small wireless facilities, I have actually prepared one ordinance for a client. It's a zoning amendment. It's not yet enacted, but it should be, it's going to be advertised to be enacted in middle of October. This ordinance actually was based on a memo that Dan Cohen provided, and tries to basically amend the zoning ordinance to, one, bring into compliance with the latest requirements of the FCC regarding these small wireless facilities, while maintaining what shrinking control we have over these things. Unfortunately, it's kind of a rear guard action at this point in time, between changes in state statutes and the FCC rulings, as well as state court rulings. Townships are losing very little control they have over these sorts of facilities. I've also, done several years ago, did prepare kind of a bigger overhaul of zoning ordinances for many of our clients regarding other types of cellular facilities, and also dealing with, at the time, what was called DAS systems. Which are kind of an earlier technology of small wireless facilities. These DAS systems are the ones you may have heard the Supreme Court granting them public utility status in a decision about a month ago, which means they basically are, as a public utility, these companies are going to be able to go into our rights of way, just like, Comcast, Verizon, Pico, PP&L. And put up whatever facilities they want without any control on our part. I think the only thing we can do about that at this point in time is just hope that the DAS is an old technology and it actually is not going to be rolled out that much now, and it's going to be more of a small wireless facility type technology. So, you know, that's my experience. I'm not as experienced as Mr. Cohen. He certainly is one of the, you know, true experts, especially from the municipal side of things in this area in the state. But I do have some experience in it, and I am slightly cheaper than he is.
Peter, I don't know if you got a chance to look at his proposal, but I guess, I don't know if we're going to make a decision today, and maybe we need some time to think about it till next week, but does the scope, I guess my question to you is, if you have seen it, is the scope of work that he proposes reasonable to you? I mean, given that
I haven't gotten a copy of it, so I can't opine on that, but I'm sure Mark can send me one and I can look it over, and we can have a discussion next week on it. The other thing I would suggest is, ask around. Dan has done a lot of work for groups of municipalities, and it's cut the cost because he's basically written the same thing for each municipality. So if you guys can look around through, Western Montgomery County or even into Bucks County, and you can find a bunch of municipalities that are all looking to do the same thing, you might be able to get Dan's work on this, but at a reduced rate, because he's doing it for a half dozen municipalities instead of just one.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe we could explore that option with our regional planning partners.
That's certainly something I would suggest. And like I said, I know Dan has done this in the past. And I think currently, I believe many of our clients are working with Dan on renegotiating, I want to say, a Comcast franchise agreement.
But my understanding, the approach would be, if Dan Cohen were to do it, is he would obviously have to know something about Lower Frederick and our unique characteristics to craft an ordinance to us.
Normally, yes, but in this case, really what we can and cannot do is mostly controlled by the FCC. The ordinance that I have written, and I'm sure the ordinance that Dan would write, basically would just adopt, provisions, all the provisions that the township could do under the FCC ruling. Like I said, there's very limited things that we can control these days, and limited amounts that we can charge for the placement of these facilities. So there's, unfortunately, there's not a lot of modifying this ordinance for each individual municipality. They're pretty much, you're going to get what everyone is going to get, because it's not that much.
I mean, part of the stated concern that's come up in previous meetings is not necessarily the amount or charging, but also, placement in what we might feel are inappropriate areas or structures, for example, like a historic structure or something like that.
Unfortunately, that's one of the things that has really been taken away from, the control of the municipality. For the most part, these facilities are going to be placed either on poles in the right of way, sometimes on structures. And what we can control, the height of them, we can control the volume of the antennas, the height and volume of these control boxes that are attached to the antennas. But beyond that, where they are actually placed within the township, the FCC is kind of taking that away from us. And that is one of the huge concerns. Like one of the big things that happened about 10 years ago in Northampton Township in Bucks County, one of these companies came into a development that had no above ground utilities. Literally one morning, came in and just started erecting telephone poles to put these antennas on. And, you know, that's the big fear that this is going to continue to happen and that these companies are going to come in. We don't have control over what they're doing. And they'll put telephone poles in people's yard where there's no telephone poles. And mostly, you know, the residents aren't happy about that. But unfortunately, you know, the way the FCC rulings are going is we have less and less power to control and limit that, you know, that from happening.
Peter, this is Marla. I've been trying to learn as much as I can, I guess, from a layman's point of view about the issue. And it's my understanding that one of the key things that is important that goes along with the ordinance is the design manual. And it's my understanding that the design manual, which can be quite lengthy, is what will describe for the township where these things can go and cannot go within the stipulations of the FCC order. That is, on a street, you can say, you can put it on the street, but not on the historic building. You can also have them share poles, ask them to share poles. And I've seen a couple of those design manuals and in a couple of different townships, they're pretty much identical. So that seems like the easiest part. And I think the design manual at least gives us some say over within a given area where they can and cannot operate as long as we don't deny them access altogether.
Yeah, generally that is correct, Marl. You know, that's one of the few areas that we still do have some controls over the aesthetics and the look of these facilities. You know, the ordinance I wrote, I actually didn't have a design manual. Those provisions were worked into the ordinance, but you certainly could have it set up where you have a separate design manual and that controls these things. But like you said, it has to operate within the boundaries given, you know, provided by the FCC.
Right, because we have many old buildings that are, as they did in those days when we had a farm, they're pretty much on the road. So I think a lot of people in this township would not want to have a telephone pole right outside their window. It's not like the newer developments where there's a setback. We have, you know, these houses are right on the road, so that's one of our particular challenges, and aesthetics is also a concern.
Yeah, the ordinance that I wrote, I think one of the specific requirements I have in there is that you're not allowed to place a pole right in front, between the road and the facade of a building, between the road and in the entry to a building. It has to be, you know, pushed away. One of the problems with whether or not they can be put on historic buildings is, you know, you're dealing with private property, and you have to see whether or not we can, you know, tell private property owners what they can and cannot put on their building. I'm not sure if we could regulate that. That's something I would actually have to look into.
I think looking at a design manual, if you haven't already, would be a helpful.
Yeah. Well,
Peter, this is Chuck Yeiser. Just a follow-up question. I assume it would not be problematic. I see that, you know, Mr. Cohen has given us an initial estimate of $5,100 and then a $300 per hour, you know, if additional time is needed. If we were to go a route and hire Mr. Cohen to do an ordinance and get his work product, I assume that there's no issue for you to take his work product and make changes to it.
So long as a change I make doesn't make it violate state law or the FCC rulings. But we're hiring him to prepare an ordinance. If we before enacting that ordinance want to make modifications to it, we certainly can.
Right.
Yeah, and Chuck, my sense, and again, I'm not a lawyer by any means, is one of the reasons for that cost is that our existing ordinance is pretty out of date. So
Right.
Even without 5G, they're still in need of an update.
No, I was just thinking, I mean, I assume the fifth, according to the what Mark has sent, Mr. Cohen reviewed our existing ordinances and formulated his $5,100 estimate based on what it's going to take to take our old ordinances and fix things up. And my question to Peter was, if we get to a point and we have something that's very close, but it still needs modification, it would be more cost efficient to have Peter make those changes if he feels comfortable making them than paying the $300 an hour to Mr. Cohen. That's all.
And you could also reverse it on reverse that kind of, who's amending what ordinance, where I could take the ordinances I've already done, modify them for Lower Frederick, put them together in a draft form, and then we can send them off to Dan and say, what do you think?
Yeah, that's another option. Maybe then the first step for you, Peter, is take a look at what we have.
Okay. Yes.
Just take a brief look at our existing.
I think
wireless ordinance is probably just what would you call it in the early 2000s.
It's just a tower, it's just a cell tower provision in the zoning. I think I actually quickly looked at it because I was warned that there was, and I saw on the agenda, this wasn't going to be a discussion. But I think your ordinance is quite out of date and actually probably violates some state and federal rules and regulations.
It probably was last updated in the early 2000s, would be my guess.
Yeah. And a lot's changed, both technologically and legally, since that time.
So is the board okay with Marla's ask that Peter spend a little time looking over our existing cell tower ordinance?
Yeah, I'm in agreement. And in the meantime, we can put some more thought into some of the other suggestions that Peter kindly brought about asking other municipalities, and just a little bit more time to consider it. Obviously, we're going to have to do something, but anything we can do to cut costs is a good thing.
Yeah, I don't think we're ready to make a decision today, although we first started talking about this pretty early in the year, so I'm also not in favor of dragging this out too much longer. I think we have a proposal, we have Peter's multiple suggestions. Maybe next week we can get closer to a decision.
But bear in mind, and we would have to clear this, but I mean, we have in our, I'm the treasurer of the Regional Planning Commission. So we have money that we have accrued for projects. Mm-hmm. And if there is regional interest in this, this could be a project that all the regional planning partners could benefit from.
When is your next meeting?
It would be September.
That's mid-September.
Yeah, okay. Like third Monday of the month.
How well do you think that would be received?
We've certainly talked about 5G at our meetings, and we all signed a letter telling our legislatures not to give these people carte blanche in terms of, doing whatever they want to do and basically, not having to play by the rules in terms of our local ordinances.
Mm-hmm. So Chuck, of the participants in our regional group, the Central Perkiomen Valley Regional Planning Commission, right? Is that it?
I got
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of them, do any of them have existing ordinances, and would they all benefit from updating them to accommodate this?
I don't think anybody has an up-to-date cell tower ordinance. And Schwanksville has something, but I don't think it's – what I looked at, it did not look like it was up-to-date for 5G.
And I think your suggestion's a really good one to see whether they would take it on, for everybody in the – because we're all going to have the same problem, right? For the most part, most of the townships in that grouping have similar or some similar characteristics. They all have historic aspects to their communities and so forth. So I think it's an excellent suggestion, Chuck.
Are we okay with that?
Yes, absolutely. I think the first step, Chuck, either you or I don't care who it is, should reach out and try to get it on the agenda. Mm-hmm. Are you volunteering? Or do you want me to do it?
Well, you're vice chair of the thing, aren't you?
All right. I've been volunteered. I'll reach out.
Well, I would ask Jamie, yeah, Magaziner, and have her. Maybe she could just send out an email now and see what kind of interest we have.
Yeah, that might be good to see if people are interested first. And it's a good idea because we do have a budget for projects, and this did come up, and it's been, I think, over a year.
Right. I mean, you know, back in 2011, we spent we had extra grant money, but I mean, there was like $70,000 spent on a traffic study for the whole region. So, I mean, we have done these things before.
Okay. All right. Sounds like a plan.
Thanks, Marla.
Thank you. And thanks, Chuck. That was a good idea.
Okay. Let me get my agenda back in front of me. Mark, you're still up, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I got it for a while here. Yep, pretty much the rest of the meeting. So update on the wastewater engineer. We have begun working with HydroTerra. We've been gathering documentation for them. We have had the Mr. Preston from HydroTerra has been out to the wastewater treatment plant a couple of times. We did have some trouble during the storm where the plant was taking in a lot of water. We had to switch some of the pumps to manual. We called HydroTerra right away after the storm went through. He was in the next day to talk with us and try to analyze what was happening. And the next week he had a representative from Aqua at the plant to try to diagnose what happened. They worked together for the good portion of a morning. The Aqua gentleman left and came back already and repaired the computer input flaw, I guess is what we'll call it. So that's already been repaired. So that was great. We had the same type of issue last year and we tried to get that done with the guys from who built the plant, Gannett Fleming, and we tried to work with them and they just did not listen to us. So Mr. Preston from HydroTerra was fantastic to work with. So now that we got that figured out, we spent most of the month of August working on that with some phone calls and some other stuff and just analyzing the storm. Now we're moving on to look at the process and those types of stuff for the wastewater treatment plant. So that's where we started the wastewater engineer off, and have been very happy so far with the information and the help that we have received from them. Any questions?
Yep. So basically they made a software update.
Aqua, the Aqua Aerobics, who is provided all of the equipment inside the plant, all the things in the basins. They have a computer program that runs the plant, and they had to update a portion of that program, correct?
That all sounds good, Mark, because working with computer software fixes and finding out the root cause of stuff is not always as straightforward as it sounds. So the fact that they were able to diagnose that quickly and give you a resolution is pretty
We were very happy.
Reassuring.
We were very happy with how quickly we got that done, and we had Aqua Aerobics out twice to the plant during the month to get that all figured out. So that was, it was very good. And we learned some other things from the Aqua guy. So it was a very good experience, and the HydroTerra did a great job for us.
Good to hear. Good news.
Any other questions on that? If not, I'll move on. The Malborn Hill update. So everybody knows Malborn Hill has been around in the township since the early 2000s. They have all of the extensions. We worked with them through the end of last year. During the spring, early summer, Malborn Hill did submit a final plan to the township. They also submitted the 90-day waiver letter to give everyone time to work on the plan. Eric Brown has been very involved in this, as there's a lot of legal items going on. At the request of the solicitor, an initial engineering review of the plan was completed by the township engineer. Our solicitor, Eric Brown, and the new Malborn Hill attorney, Greg Adelman. So Malborn Hill changed their attorney, have been reviewing the engineer's review of the plan, the original agreements from the preliminary plan approval, and the existing conditional use agreement. They've been working on determining the legal position of many of these items, as some of the items are no longer applicable. Currently, Mr. Brown has been updating and preparing our new solicitor, Mr. Nelson, to continue the discussions on the township behalf. So we did get Eric and Peter together to start moving this stuff on so that we can continue with these discussions. The township is we're waiting for the solicitor and the Malborn Hills attorney to bring us back a document to address these issues in the preliminary plan approval and the conditional use agreement so that we can begin to move the plan forward. So a lot of this is the legal discussions that are going on between the solicitor and the lawyer with all of the old existing agreements that are on the plan. So that's where we're at with it. We're just waiting for them to work through many of those items so that then we can begin to move forward on this.
Okay. Just a quick question, Mark, on that. With respect to my understanding is they had an extension that takes them to the end of August. What happens when that extension runs out?
I think the extension takes them till May of next year.
Oh. Okay.
They originally ran out in August, and now they run out in May with the extension.
Okay. I remember. Yeah, I'm sorry.
We voted on a 9-month extension last
year.
So
yeah, I recall. Yeah.
That takes them to May.
Yeah. My.
So that is another thing that comes into play is that.
Yeah.
So, but Eric had been working with Mr. Adelman. And as I said, Eric Brown has updated Peter with a bunch of documents. He sent a bunch of documents yesterday or Friday to Peter. And I know they have spoken a couple of times already to bring Peter up to bring him up to date on where everything is at.
Thanks for refreshing my memory.
Yep,
not a forgot problem. About that 9-month extension we gave him.
Yep.
Great, thank you, Mark. I don't have any questions at this time.
The next thing, this wasn't on the advertised agenda. I forgot to put it on there, but we do need to ratify our disaster declaration resolution 20-20 for the tropical storm Isis that was on August 4th. Once we saw that the storm was definitely going to cause damage to the township, we went and put together a disaster declaration so that we could get that to the county. What that will do is if FEMA and PEMA, if the county reaches a certain number, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in a little bit, then hopefully the township will be able to recoup some of the money that we're spending to repair damage from the storm, the tropical storm. So we just need to approve that disaster declaration.
Are you looking for a motion?
Yes, please.
I will move to approve a disaster declaration resolution 2020-20 for Tropical Storm Ice. And I don't know how to pronounce it. I guess it's Isaias.
Isis.
Isis.
I think. No, I think is how they said it.
I spelled it Isaias, so that's how I'm. Anyway, you wrote it down, so whatever it is.
Since I got to see a lot of Isis in my front yard, I'll second the motion.
Right, so Marla Hexter makes the motion. Dan Orff seconds the motion for a disaster declaration for August 4th and Tropical Storm Isaias.
Good move.
That's one way to do it.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of ratifying and approving resolution 2020-20, which is a disaster declaration due to tropical storm Isaias. Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any against? Great. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
All right, so now
our last disaster declaration of the year.
Hopefully. We are still under our COVID disaster declaration that happened. So moving into the workshop area of our meeting. So Tropical Storm Isaias. So unfortunately, during the storm, the township received close to 7 inches of rain or more, depending on where in the township you were. We did have several roads that were damaged. We had Woodside Avenue, where the stream that runs behind Main Street came over the road there and tore out a pretty good section of roadway off of Woodside. We didn't have to close that road, as that road's a one-way road in that area and is a, you know, not a heavily used road. Kratz Road, Dan's front yard there on the bottom. Kratz Road, in between the culvert and Hendricks, was damaged pretty severely, probably the most damaged road that we had. The picture below at the stop sign, that was around 3 p.m. on August 4th. The water kept coming up until approximately 8, I think it was, Dan. So probably that stop sign was completely underwater when the flooding was at its peak. But we had major damage on Kratz Road. It's almost like the road, like the water picked up the road and dropped it. And then we had like little volcanoes and stuff. It was heavily damaged. Smith Road, again, the little, I think it's an unnamed tributary there also, came over the culvert near Burger Lane, went across the road, destroying the road. Our fire company, who also should be commended, did a, I don't know if you saw it on Facebook, but they did a very heroic rescue. You can see the car in the upper left-hand corner. That lady got out of her car and was headed towards the Perkiomen and got near, I don't know if you know the area, but there's actually a culvert that she would have been sucked under, which is under like a shed or something that's out there. So the fire company, if you go on the fire company's Facebook page, they have a video of them rescuing that woman from the floodwaters, which was very heroic. And thank goodness we have firefighters that are out there to do that. At this time, as of today, all our roads are repaired. All our roads are reopened. We did have trees down in a couple of areas too, where we had, and I think we still have low hanging lines on Mine Hill near Delphi. There's still some cable lines that we're waiting for the cable company to come back and pick up and raise. Also in Foy Park, it was kind of neat to see, but really not neat because we have to clean it up. There's a gravel bar that's probably 10 to 16 inches deep that runs from the creek all the way out past the blacktop pads. Our guys have been down there for a couple of days trying to clean that up and remove all of that stone and silt out of the grass area of the park. That you can see there, you can see how thick it is that was over the trail. And then you can see how far it extends. So the force of water is definitely something to not mess with. So that was the damage that we had to the township property. The water in the Perkiomen, as everyone knows, it was the highest it's been at 19.1 feet. I think the highest it had been before that was 18.25 feet. It got up to basically the lower building at the sewer treatment plant. It did not go into any of the buildings, but it was lapping at the base of the lowest building at the sewer plant. So the guys had never seen the river that high, as we know. So when we did our disaster resolution, we sent that to the county. I have sent them all the estimates of what it was going to be to get our roads repaired. If the county hits a number of $3 million in damages for county and all the townships to, you know, public property, then FEMA and PEMA will be called in. I think also there would be a chance that if the state hit, I think it was $19 million, I was told, then FEMA and PEMA could come in from there also. The state was $5 million away. I don't know how close the county is, but the woman that I spoke to from the county didn't give it a very high percentage that we will be getting money from FEMA and PEMA. But there's still a couple of days. I think people have till next Tuesday. Municipalities have till next Tuesday to turn in damage estimates. So we can keep hoping. Another thing that comes with that is personal property that sustained substantial structural damage. I visited one house on Walnut. The gentleman had me out. He did not have any real structural damage. I'm going to visit another house tomorrow. If anyone knows of anyone that has had substantial structural damage, please let me know. I have a form that I can come fill out with the property owner. I have not talked to anyone that's had structural damage. A lot of people lost washers, dryers, some heaters, that kind of stuff. Obviously, people had mud in their homes. Other, you know, mowers, whatever. People didn't move out of the floodwaters, but this was looking for more substantial structural damage. If you did lose a bunch of like washers, dryers, refrigerators, give me a call. I can put a report in, but they're really looking for structural damage. So if anyone knows of anyone, please have them get a hold of me.
Mark,
yes.
Does that end up helping with like the overall county total? Is that what the purpose of that would be?
No, that goes with private property. So the initial $3 million is public property.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes to private. There may be some money coming for private, but they're not sure they're going to reach that. So what I was told was the county probably will not reach that amount, but Philadelphia looks like they will. So if Philadelphia does, they look at neighboring counties. So we may have an opportunity to get personal. But again, it has to be substantial structural damage. And I haven't found anyone that's really had their home damaged. You know, I mean, like the foundation, anything like that.
Okay.
If you know of someone, though, please have them call me so we can get a report in for them. So, again, the FEMA and PEMA, you know, we're hoping for assistance, but unfortunately, from talking with the county, from speaking with the county, it doesn't look like we're going to get any public assistance.
Mark?
Yes.
Are you done with topic A there, tropical storm? I-S-A-I-A-S.
Yep. Yeah, unless anyone has any questions.
All right.
Mark, this is Marla. I have a question. Was the road work done from money out of our liquid fuels fund?
The road work, well, we haven't paid for any of it yet. The road work was, you know, was done to get the roads back open. We do have an option. I did call our liquid fuels representative from PennDOT, and if the board would want me to, I can put a proposal together to amend our already liquid fuels approval to see if we could use our liquid fuels money to do the repairs to the roads. We would then just have to modify our current paving plan that we have, but I can do that and we can work on that and I can come up with a new plan.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking is I know we had a plan to do some repairs to roads that needed it, but maybe again, just look at the highest priorities and try to push some back a little if possible. This was so unexpected.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Let me work on that a little more. He wasn't 100% sure that we could do it, but let me get an email to him. I'll work on that tomorrow and, you know, see if I can get a reply from him by our next meeting.
That sounds like a good plan. Mark, just, you may have said something and I missed it, but what is your estimate in terms of the road repair costs due to this storm?
Road repair cost estimate, like, what, $35,000?
Okay. So you had mentioned fire and police giving thanks. I also want to give thanks to you. You worked really hard those days. I know that from being on the phone with you and talking to you at different hours. I also want to give thanks to our road crew who also works with our sewer plant. They knew the storm was coming. They were down one person. They did everything they needed to do to make sure that plant could accommodate what was coming, and they babysat that plant all day long to make sure it was doing what it was supposed to be doing. And so it was a very long day for them, in addition to, you know, going around town and putting up barriers where roads were impassable. So there were a lot of people working hard that day. And also, I'm sure our engineer was also on the phone with people advising things too. So everybody, I think, did a great job from what I could tell. So thank you all.
Yeah. Second.
That on.
Thank you, everybody. Yes.
Thanks. You guys have been great.
Any other questions about the storm? I did have, hopefully the road repairs could, Larry Cohen commented, hopefully the road repairs could be done in a way to improve the roadbeds and prevent further damage in the storms. Yes, we are hoping for that. We used extra tack coat. We kept Kratz Road closed probably a little longer than it needed to be, but we wanted to make sure it, you know, set up all before people got on it or anything. So we are trying to do that, and hopefully we don't ever have a storm like that again in a very, very long time.
Yeah, that'd be good.
If I don't see any questions, I'll keep going. And we had the ordinance and SATO update for below-grade structures and sump pumps. The Planning Commission looked at this at their meeting last week. And then the EAC had a very extensive conversation about this yesterday. They are still working on it and going to provide some updates. They're going to meet with a soil scientist to discuss, you know, their proposal, their ordinance. I know Jackie sent Carol an email today to try to schedule that meeting. So unless there's any comments, you know, we had this on the agenda in case things fell into place. I know they're still working on them and going to do some modifications. So unless there's questions or comments, I think we can move forward on this, past this.
Mark, I think if I remember correctly, there were, you know, board members who also wanted to you know, be present with the meeting with the soil scientist and I think maybe even some planning commission members. I don't.
Okay. I think Jackie had several, it just came in late. She had several people on the email, I think.
As long as they don't, you know, they comply with quorum rules. And I want to thank the very working members of the EAC. They have some very long and brain-bending meetings. So those of us who attend those, we can attest to that.
Yeah. They Jackie took the notes as far as setting up that meeting with the soil scientists to ensure that there wouldn't be an excess of a quorum for either the EAC, the PC, or the BOS. So she's making her invitations based upon those considerations. That was resolved at about 10:30 on Monday night.
I have a question. Does this plan on going back to the Planning Commission before it comes before the Board of Supervisors, or are they going to do what they're going to do with the soil scientists and then come back to the board?
My understanding is they're going to send it back to the PC.
Okay.
And then after the PC looks at it, it would be sent, if the PC agrees with it, it would be forwarded from the PC and the EAC simultaneously to the BOS. Okay. How many letters I can use.
Yeah, right.
I think somewhere in there the county looks at it, but I can't recall it when.
Yeah, the county does a review and they supply a review letter.
Is that before it comes to the board?
Usually we get them before it goes to the Planning Commission. So the Planning Commission actually has a county review letter to look at when they're reviewing it.
Okay, so if there's anyone here from EAC, hope you heard that.
Yeah, I was wondering if Jackie was aware of that.
And Peter, yep. does that sound right with what you would recommend? We have a draft, an ordinance that is drafted by their Environmental Advisory Council with input from the Planning Commission. So does that jive with what you'd recommend?
I mean, so, you know, I would actually probably recommend that they put together, maybe not try to put it in ordinance form, but put together everything they would like to see in the ordinance without spending much time on like format and putting it in an ordinance form. To be honest, it'd probably be quicker for me to do that than have the committee, one of those committees, do it. But, you know, certainly having the PC and the EAC work on kind of fleshing out exactly what they want to see in the ordinance is the best way to go, instead of having me flail around trying to put something together.
So then would it then go to you next and then to the county and then to the board?
Yes, because my understanding on this ordinance, this would be something that we... It would be an amendment to our zoning ordinance, correct?
We would.
That's what's been discussed. Or Saldo.
If it's a land use ordinance, under Pennsylvania law, the final version of that ordinance, and literally I mean final, we would have to forward to both the township and the county planning commissions and give them 30 days to review prior to the Board of Supervisors holding a hearing on enacting that ordinance. So yeah, you under the law, you have to, now you can provide to the County Planning Commission drafts up until that point, but when you get to the final version, you still would then have to provide that final version to both planning commissions to give them 30 days to review it. Not that they have to, but you just have to give them that opportunity.
And I think what Jackie has in place at this point, she was just cleaning up the text based upon Monday night's meeting. So that could be, so you're saying it should be passed on to you to kind of make it proper from a legal perspective and then do the next two steps after that?
Yes. Okay. But I mean, if the board or you know, if the township wants to get the county's input before we get it into final form, you certainly can do that. You just have to recognize, you know, once we get into final form, we have to send it back no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, that's generally been our practice, is to try to get incorporate the county's comments during the time that we're looking at it. And that way we save any iterations, you know. I mean, that's the way we've worked in the past. And for that matter, we also ask the people who have to enforce it, like, you know, for their opinions, or work with the ordinance, like our engineer, you know, to also comment on it to make sure that it's something that the engineer understands and how it's to be applied. They look at it from a different angle than you know, than we do.
Okay.
And Peter, one other question. Do you have a legal opinion on whether we are better served putting this in the saldo or putting it in zoning? Because there has been some discussion about that. And
well, you have to recognize if it's put in the saldo, it can only be applied to a subdivision or a land development. It can't be applied to a property that's not going through one of those two processes. So, you know, if you want it to apply all the time into a wider range of properties, you should put it into zoning. If you only want it to apply to properties going through land development or being subdivided, put it in saldo.
Yeah, I think they came to the conclusion, Marla, that they would go with the saldo because that works even if somebody's building, you know, has a 2-acre lot and they're just developing it themselves. They still have to go through saldo for that. Or even a single lot subdivision that goes through saldo. They have to.
Does if someone just buys 2 acres and builds one house, does that go through saldo?
No.
They have to.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a subdivision is literally, you know, a lot line change, okay, or creating more than one lot out of, you know, rearranging the number of lots. A land development is either the construction of two residential buildings or the construction of a single non-residential building. But yeah, if someone is just buys a lot, you know, that already exists and comes in and builds a house on that lot, that just requires a building permit. It does not require a land development or subdivision approval.
Okay, they do need to comply with all the requirements associated with the zoning.
Yes, right. Correct.
Okay, and they have to get all appropriate permits and so forth as well.
Yes. The one thing they avoid is getting a land development approval.
That's why in Planning Commission, we typically don't see those projects.
Right. Now that actually sounds.
I mean, the other
they want to be.
The other issue was, you know, if it's in zoning, it cannot be waived. And I think the consensus was they wanted to be able to waive it.
Or have that is the one problem putting into zoning, is that if someone can't comply, you know, they're going to have to go through the variance process with the zoning hearing board.
Right. So, you know, that's like $800 to.
Yeah. So the only thing this excludes is if somebody has the by putting in saldo, the one thing that's excluded is if there's an existing 2-acre parcel or buildable parcel and somebody chooses to put a house on it, they have to comply with all the other appropriate rules, but this wouldn't kick in nor any other saldo specific requirements, right? Did I get it right?
Yes. If this was in the saldo, it would not kick in that. It would not apply in that situation.
But if somebody split one lot into two and then chose to build a house on that second lot, then saldo kicks in.
Then yes, they would have to comply with saldo. Yes.
Okay. Then we're following the way that these guys had in mind.
So right. Okay. Good.
Okay. At least I'm pretty sure. I'm not going to swear for everybody, but that's sort of what I believe they were intending to do. So hedging your bets.
Okay. So based on this discussion, it sounds like that it may be I don't know if it's premature to take this to the Planning Commission until it's actually, it sounds like the next step is to put it into a legal format.
That's, you're right, Marla. I agree with you.
To the county and go before the Planning Commission.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Mark, who's coordinating the meeting with the soil scientists?
Jackie is.
So who is going to be invited to that meeting?
The people I know that she's planning to invite were the members of the two that the ones I'm aware of, the members of the work team, the four person team. So it'd be like two members, that'd be myself and Greg, but she was going to also reach out. And then, it was her and, I think Roof was the other person. From the EAC, but yeah, she probably has the name of who else she was going to reach out to. She was going to keep it to three people from the EAC, three people from the PC, and two people from the BOS.
So you get counted in two spots.
Yeah, unfortunately, I subtract a number. So
I think Noelle had asked to be part of that meeting, if I remember correctly.
I would like to, but it's if someone else would like to be there, or I'm fine with that. But yeah,
why can't we get around this by just having a public meeting?
There were issues about having a public meeting with, actually, Carol can probably answer this. I don't know how comfortable Carol is in having her soil scientist at a public meeting. I didn't know whether that's part of what she was offering, because she's doing the work pro bono.
Yeah, it really is more like a staff meeting. It's not really, doesn't really fall into the public meeting bucket. I mean, this is really a staff meeting.
Are we planning to hold this virtually?
Yeah.
I assume so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one thing that could be done is, you know, just record the meeting, and then anyone who wants to, you know, listen in later can listen to the recording, and that would not violate any sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carol, what would your thoughts be on the meeting being recorded and people being able to listen to it afterwards?
I don't think there's any problem with that at all, Dan. I think that's a good idea. My expectation was that we were really talking sort of about the nuts and bolts of how the ordinance works with regard to soil testing and things, because that's his area of expertise. So it might not be, I don't know how broad the discussion will be. I was envisioning more of a nuts and bolts kind of discussion for technical purposes, but I think that's great. We, you know, record the meeting and make sure that everybody has access to the information, because good information is of great value.
Yeah, so my understanding is Jackie was going to collect questions prior to the meeting and provide them prior to the meeting so that you and your soil scientists would have them, or soil scientists, it's hard to say, would have that information prior to the meeting. And then we could gun through those things pretty quickly. And then if there were things that were discussion points that came up. So that's my understanding of what Jackie was planning to do.
Yes, and I did get that email from Jackie late this afternoon, and I forwarded the dates to Stephen, the soil scientist. He was out in the field today, soil scientisting, so we should be able to get back to her tomorrow with some dates.
Okay, soil scientist Steve. Okay.
So, Chuck, I think if you have some questions you want answered, you could forward those to Jackie, if that would help.
I'm the one who's asked for this.
Oh, okay.
No, I think I actually keep
the EAC. Repeatedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that came up at the EAC last night, that anyone who has questions, that Jackie could compile a list of questions if they couldn't be at the meeting or whatever the case may be, so that they can be answered ahead of time, so we can keep this moving smoothly, keep moving ahead.
I do think, Chuck, you had specific questions. It would be good if you were able to attend.
That would be my hope.
Yeah. Then I don't know whether I can say I'm just with one group or the other if I have to count as two people.
I think you have to count as two.
Okay.
Well, what does Peter think? So Dan is on the planning commission and he's a supervisor. Does he count as two?
Yeah, he has to count as two. You can't kind of pick which group you're with. Now, okay. But to throw a complete, you know, curveball at this, there are court cases out there where a majority of a member of a board have been at a non-public meeting, and that's not an executive session, where that meeting is just for informational purposes. If all the participants in this meeting agree that they're just going to show up, listen to soil scientist Steve give a presentation, and really not get into any discussion, we certainly can make the argument that, this does not violate the Sunshine Act. To be honest, I'd be, with this number of people representing this many boards, I'd be a little concerned going there. But that is always also another alternative.
Yeah, let me know the dates. We'll work it some way.
Okay.
Are we moving on? Mark, yep. I don't have my agenda up.
I think that was the last thing.
New business.
All right, so.
Good old fashioned way.
Yeah.
I'll move this on. I do want to let everyone know, and the board does know, we were informed from the state that the two grant applications that the township put together last year, for one for the H2O grant and one for the small waters grant, we did not receive either of those grants. The H2O grant was for the sewer line extension on Riverside and Fulmer, and then the PA small waters grant was to continue with the manhole lining and videoing of the sanitary sewer system existing. So unfortunately, neither of those grant applications were successful. We had been told that that was not going to come out until September repeatedly, and then all of a sudden it came out on the 17th of, or the 18th of August. I actually saw it on a state representative's site from a different area is where, yeah, I actually found to start looking at it. So unfortunately, we did not receive either of those grants.
So in terms of the extension project, we'll talk about that. I guess what we should be looking at now, what are our alternatives?
We need to sit down and have a conversation about the extension. We should bring Peter into the information, and then also bring Hydroterra, into the conversation a little bit too.
And knowing what it's costing us to service this loan, it should not be something that's kicked down the road for any length of time. We've been waiting for this, and now we know, and now we need to do something.
Correct.
The only thing I could, the state, from what I, not that I'm super experienced in this area, but I've heard with both these grant programs, the more often you apply, the more likely you're going to get it. That this is the first year you applied, chances are you're not going to get it. But if you reapply for next year or reapply for the year after, your likelihood of being given the grant is much higher. That's what I've heard from other municipalities and other consultants.
Yeah, there's also politics involved too in these DCED grants. So, Mark, is that an action item that you're going to take then, is to start?
Yeah, I'll start to put together something for that, some sort of plan or a meeting that we can start to discuss it.
Okay. Any other new business? Or we move to public comment? Hearing nothing, I'll move to public comment. Do we have any comment from the public?
While we're waiting, I just want to, since I spent part of my weekend reviewing minutes, I just want to remind people when they make their comments or when they write in a call or write into Mark, that you please state your name and your street name, because we need to get that in the minutes. It's required by Pennsylvania law for us to put the name and address of people. So we're getting the names, we're not getting the addresses, or sometimes we're not getting either. So just a reminder to everybody. Thanks.
All right, we do have someone, I'm not sure, but they'll have to state their name and address.
So this is Galaxy A21. This is Brian Hill, 11 Zieglerville Road. I'm calling you. I'm participating on my phone, and unfortunately, it didn't offer my name. So yeah, Brian Hill, 11 Zieglerville Road. So first comment I'd like to make is regarding the continual issue of speeding on Zieglerville Road. I have not seen police on our street for quite some time. It is now becoming airport landing strip and takeoff strip, to the point where we've had cars going in and about the 80-mile-an-hour range. So I would ask that, you know, the police would begin coming back onto a Zieglerville Road. The other thing I would, I've mentioned this in the past, is the presence of trash throughout our community. I have several times now walked my own street and picked up litter from Schwenk all the way to 29. Just driving down 7329, consistently seeing trash. You know, I work in Northeast Philadelphia, and I don't want our community to look like Northeast Philadelphia, strewn with trash consistently. And, you know, we need to be a community that is takes pride, and that means taking maybe an hour or two of your day once a month, once every other month, once a quarter, and just walking your street and looking for trash. I think we as members of our community need to take that opportunity and put it back into our community. I appreciate the board of supervisors and those who are in offices, either in a volunteer or slightly volunteer situation, giving their time. But I think as a community, we need to take time to beautify our community. And it's a simple thing as taking a trash bag and walking a quarter mile. You get some exercise and you do something for our community. So I would ask that we do that as a community. And thank you for letting me make these comments.
Thank you, Brian. I'm with you there on the trash. We whenever we go for a walk, we have a bag with us. And it's been a problem on our road for a number of years. And as far as the speeding, I assume it's, yeah.
I will pass that on to the police department and see what we can do.
Yeah, and Brian, unfortunately, when you have a Wawa, I mean, a lot of this is, not all of it, but I think a significant amount is Wawa generated. I live not far from the Wawa either, and I'm always picking up bags of trash. So that's a challenge.
I pick up mostly Keystone light beer cans. So I think you must have a different class of people walking your street. So
I was gonna say ours is the coffee, you know, the cold, the coffee with the iced coffee, you know, the people, the containers of that. Yeah. Same spot almost every day.
Yeah.
Right near 111.
Maybe so again, you can put the trash can out.
Brian,
at least throw your coffee Brian. In here.
I think we have Brian back.
If I can,
and I have Bob,
yeah, if I could comment back on the trash, I'll be honest with you, it is not Wawa at all. It is people's trash coming from their trash can. It is people, I've seen people throwing trash out of their cars. Particularly, unfortunately, Mr. Burns seems to be a subject of the collection of trash. A lot of beer bottles up in that area quite often, beer cans, soda cans. It's some unspeakables, and it's not what we would think. Yes, I've seen Wawa, but primarily it's from us as homeowners and those who are passing through our streets. That's where the trash is coming from.
Yeah. Different areas get different things. My road is certainly, Yerger is certainly a cut through to get over to Limerick in that area. So, you know, we get the occasional large screen TV and tire dumps and all kinds of stuff too.
I just, following up on, what Brian said, one of the things I noticed is some of the trash companies have now taken to having lids on top of their recycling containers. Is that something that township has any, I guess we can't ask people to, the companies to do that, but I think it would cut down a lot of things because a lot of times you put out your recycling bin there and all you need is a strong gust or they knock it over and not everything gets out of it. So I don't know whether that's something that we could request of the local. There's like three or four main local trash collection organizations, to my knowledge, right?
So. Well, I think individuals can request it from their trash company. Maybe that's
okay.
That's the thing to do. But I know what you mean. That is an issue, especially with the winds we get.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian, maybe that's a suggestion you can make to some.
Yeah, Brian has his hand up again.
Okay. And the I think it's up from the first time. And also, just a shout-out, Perkiomen Watershed Conservancy, their cleanup in the spring was postponed until the fall. And I got an email recently. They're still planning on trying to do something in the fall. So this is their – they call it a stream cleanup, but it is one of the largest trash cleanups in this whole southeastern Pennsylvania, if not the largest. And I know a number of us have been involved with it for years. I believe they're still going to be doing it. So if you want to look on their site, if you're interested in helping, it's usually on a Saturday.
Yeah, I think with a lot of those efforts, it's the end picture of the mountain of trash gathered. That's like the gratification and just an idea. And if people can do it safely, it might even be pick a weekend or even a month of, you know, something on our Facebook, post your picture of all the trash you collected this weekend and see all the cups and masks and everything else that we tend to find in our mowers if you live along a road. But just an idea. And also, for what it's worth, I still see a lot of the we have whitetail here, and we still see a lot of the blue recycling cans without lids. If you call them for free for a quarterly service charge, of course, they'll bring you another recycling container with the yellow lid, so you don't have to worry about everything blowing away as long as the lid doesn't blow off. So just as an FYI, I still see a lot of them, people dragging them out their driveways. They'll bring a toter for no extra charge. You could just call them.
Thanks for that, Terry. That's a good point. I didn't know you could just call them and get it. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be on hold for like 30 minutes, but just bear with it.
Yeah, it looks like someone has their hand up.
Phil has his hand up, and Mark seems to be on the phone with somebody.
Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my question, I guess, is really to Mark. Has the township received information from the Indian Valley Appraisal Company on the Reynolds property appraisal? So I don't know.
I think Mark is still on the phone.
Okay. Maybe he's on the phone with Indian Valley.
Yeah, right.
Did you hear Phil?
You're on mute, Mark.
Mark, can't hear you. Now's a good time to know sign language.
If you're looking to close the meeting, he could email me a response to that question.
Still muted, Mark? Yeah, shoot.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. We're waiting. All right, I think I got, look at that. I missed the whole thing with Phil, so you'll have to fill me in, but I got Bob Worms working.
Phil asked whether we've heard from Indian Valley.
No, we have not.
Thank you.
You guys got me?
But we have Bob. Yep, Bob, you're there now.
Okay, I don't want to talk over anybody else. Bob Burns, Zieglerville Road. First of all, I want to thank the board for everything they've been doing, and Mark, the manager, and the staff as well. It's been a trying time with all this flooding and whatnot, and the coronavirus and everything else involved. So, the first thing I want to hit on, and actually, I guess this question would go to Mark first. Mark, you had mentioned about the signage on Village Drive, 3 signs on one curve and 4 signs on the other curve, and that the signs would be like 200 feet apart. So I'm a little confused, because if you're coming from Grimley, let's call it headed westbound on Grimley to go westbound on Village, that's where the curve is, and that curve ends at Aspen. And then simultaneously coming back the other direction, that would be that curve. So that total curve, you know, I don't know how many feet that is, you know, just thinking about it, it's only a couple hundred feet to begin with. So are you also figuring on signage down along the basin area on Village Drive?
No, we're signing both sides of the curve. So I said 3 signs on the inside of the curve, and it'll be 4 signs on the outside of the curve.
Okay.
He did show a graphic, Bob, when he was explaining it.
Yeah, but with me calling in on the phone, I don't get to see the graphic, so that's part of that problem. Yeah. So I mean, here again, you know, I know we're, you know, we're trying to save money. We don't want to do all this advertising. We want to try to do things in a common sense way. And this was my objection last year to the previous board when they only wanted to do striping on one side and signage and have the ordinance written up at that point in time. And now you're talking about coming back and doing it again. And you still haven't really discussed the striping, which is, you know, part of the problem here. It's not just the signage, you know, it's delineating where these people that are parking on the east side of Village Drive, where that parking starts and where that parking stops. And I don't know if Lou's back on at this point in time. He had called me earlier and told me, you know, to make sure that I mention his name again tonight. And, you know, that he's concerned as well. He might be back now since we're at 9:15, obviously. But I think with the board not talking about the striping portion of it, you know, it doesn't sound like anybody's contacted GuideMark to get a quote from GuideMark as to what that striping is going to cost on that side of it. And here again, I think I've made it perfectly clear, paint only. We don't need thermoplastic. So, you know, I think that's a big portion of the issue there. I can tell you that there was a car parking the opposite direction on Village Drive, and the police ticketed that car. It did sit there the balance of the weekend. From what I understand, it hasn't been back since. It's obviously parking either the right direction, or it's parking in a different spot. So I don't know if you guys want to talk about that before I go to the next subject.
Well, I think as far as the signs are concerned, I think I'm sure other board members will jump in and correct me if I'm misstating the intention, but I think we wanted to just move forward with the project and get something going and do that, accomplish that right now. That was the thinking.
Okay, but I mean, you're still talking about having to put the advertisement in. I mean, we already advertised it last year because the previous board wanted to do it in a piecemeal fashion. Now, if we go ahead and advertise it again in another piecemeal fashion, then we're going to have to come back and do it again. I mean, I don't know what this advertising cost is. Is it $100? Is it $300? Is it $500? You know, you guys always talk about the advertising cost, but nobody is given an idea of what that advertising cost is.
Advertising costs usually are between $300 and $500.
I think we're just, you know, it sounded like there are some other things that may have to be advertised. We're just trying to bundle it together. But we had talked in our meeting about getting it done by the end of the year, the ordinance. So we're almost into September, so it's not that far off.
Right, and all I'm asking you guys to still consider is to still consider if we're going to be paving some of the roads in the township this year that are going to need line striping, or Tommy has it in his budget for additional line striping throughout the township to be done, for that piece of striping to be done. And, you know,
well,
that helps the whole situation, I think.
Due to the storm damage and the possibility of using liquid fuels, all these plans may have to be tweaked a little bit.
Okay.
Is that correct, Mark?
Yes.
I mean, the storm really threw a big wrench in a lot of things.
No, I understand that. The COVID thing did too, and the hit on the earned income tax and everything else. It's a domino effect here. So
what's the next topic, Bob?
Oh God. So I want to tag on to what Brian was talking about, not only with the speeding and the trash. It does seem that part of the trash issue is that there's several trash companies that have recyclable containers and trash containers that are out at the curb. And when we get storms, especially these pop-up afternoon storms, with some wind, you know, it knocks these containers over, and, you know, the stuff's going up and down the street. As far as the trash portion is concerned, I know I have Whitetail myself, and Whitetail 2 weeks ago changed their day in our township from Monday to Tuesday now, and it took them till Thursday to finally get out here and pick up our recyclables. I did call them. I did explain the urgency. There was a storm coming that afternoon, and they got somebody out here at 5 o'clock that evening and picked up mine and my three neighbors' trash. The other three have the blue cans, which are the problem child. I have the can with the lid on it, which isn't as much of a problem. But here again, that still could be blown over. As far as the speeding is concerned, yeah, the traffic volume is down all over in all of our roads. But the people that are still driving on our roads, I would say a good 50% of them are still speeding. Now, I've left messages for Officer Rinker and for Chief Maxey and for Corporal Milligan. The only person that has gotten back to me was about 2 or 3 weeks ago was Officer Rinker. So, you know, I haven't seen the police presence very much. Okay. I know they're still probably concerned about doing stops with the COVID and everything else going on, but I believe our neighboring townships have already started doing more enforcement, and that can be easily seen by the docket at most sailors when it's being reported by those reporting agencies.
Well, you know, Mark has heard about it from a few people. I'm sure he will communicate with the police and you know, make sure that they are doubly aware of it.
Okay. The other thing.
Yeah, Bob, we want to try to, in all fairness, you know, we do, if you've got, I don't know how many more questions you have, but we are, you know, we don't want to run too long here if we can avoid that.
I hear you, Chuck.
What else do you have briefly?
The other question I have is all the discussion that was had about Eric Brown working on something with Melbourne Hills and filling Peter in, and you know, it's nice to have Peter here on board with us now. So is that all getting charged to Melbourne Hills? under the professional services, or is that on our dime?
Mark?
That'll probably be a combination of a little bit of both. Obviously, it's not the applicant's fault that we switched, but it is also the applicant that we're working towards. So I don't know the exact figures on that yet, but it'll probably be a little bit of a split.
Okay. So one of my questions, and I think Chuck asked you the question, is the form that you're using for these escrow agreements with these developers, is it like a standard form that we're using? And I guess the issue that I brought up to you the most for the last couple of years is where do we stand with the escrow account for Metropolitan Development? Back when Mr. Keenan was our solicitor, he explained to me that they were supposed to have $20,000 in there at all times, and that when any payments were paid out, that the township would bill them, and they had 30 days to replenish that money. So I believe on the latest posted financials, Metropolitan is somewhere just shy of $6,000. I don't know how many months it's been that way, but I know, Mark, you had asked Cindy to try to get that closer to the $20,000 number.
Yeah, we had
Bob,
that.
It sounds like some of these questions you've asked before, and they would be better addressed right by dealing directly with Mark outside the meeting. Do you have any questions that have to do with today's business?
It relates to today's business, Mara, and we have a new solicitor, and a new solicitor can weigh in on it at this point in time.
Well, can that be answered perhaps at our next meeting? It's only a week
Absolutely.
Away.
That's fine.
Right. I will say, you know, when I've discussed this with our manager, or our manager has discussed it actually with all of us, I think, in a public meeting, that, you know, Metropolitan has been good in paying their bills. They have been up to date. So it's, that is at least what I believe Mark has indicated in the past when you asked this question.
Well, I know in the past when it was down to like $2,800, he had gotten it straightened out, and then it got put back up to $20,000. And then with all the COVID thing and me not being able to see all the financials, I haven't been tracking it and looking at it. All I can tell you is that the previous financials just being posted, they're under $6,000. So, you know, if our agreement states, which Mr. Keenan told me, whether that's true or not, that they have, you know, like a 30 to 60 day leeway to get this straightened out. And right, it's not just them, it's everybody, every one of our people that has the escrow account. So if our format's not correct, maybe Peter needs to take a look at it and say, hey, wait a minute, I understand what he's saying. We need to look at this. Let it go there, and hopefully
we'll follow up at our next meeting.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mark?
I have a question from Linda Jansen.
Yep.
Regarding the small cell facilities, if we go in with the Central Valley Regional Planning Commission on a regional ordinance, is that enforceable as we would have one inclusive to LFT? We have been told recently our plans are only recommendations and will not hold up in court. I think what the idea is the Regional Planning Commission would hire him, and the ordinances would each be unique to each township, but they're very closely related.
That's the idea.
But the ordinance would be ours. It wouldn't be a recommendation from a planning commission. It would be a ordinance that the township would do. It would just be being paid for in a group format.
It would be adopted by Lower Frederick as its own ordinance. And if there are some minor tweaks to make it specific to Lower Frederick, we can handle that.
Yep.
Any other questions, Mark?
Brian asked if we've considered resuming on-site township meetings. If so, when? At this time, we are still going to continue with online and this because we cannot have usually the quantity of people that come to our meetings in our building.
Any other questions, Mark?
Nope.
It's like there's another comment from Brian.
Okay. There it is on the bottom. Rolled past me. Thought this was public comment, not question and answer. This should be reviewed by the board. The Perk Valley School District Board only allows for comment. They do not comment back. It was a comment.
Okay.
Yeah, well Brian is mentioning that Pennsylvania law does not require us to answer any questions. That is completely optional. So we are required to take comments. You're right.
That's right.
And as a public citizen, can I make a comment?
Yep.
Go for it, Dan.
And this can be answered at next meeting. I understand there's a situation with the placement of some very large boulders over at the Arcadia property, and they were actually placed behind the tree line fence. And so I'm not looking for an answer today but it's something that we probably should get a feedback from at the coming meeting, because a couple people have brought it to my attention. It's something they want to know what actually would be the outcome to that. So I don't need an answer now, but I did think it's something that should be addressed the next meeting.
Are you aware of that, Carol? Or is this the first?
Yes, she's aware.
I am aware of that, yes. And I've been out there with the manager, and I'm looking forward to consulting with the solicitor on this matter so that I can report to the board at the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you, because I wanted to bring it up just so that it got on the docket for next week.
Thank you.
Yeah. And is there a potential input legally as well, or is it just...
We were waiting to have Peter official, but we already have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow. So,
thank you very much, Mark. And
yep.
Carol. Anything else there, Mark?
Let me just refresh. I do not see anything, Chuck.
Great. So let me just rip through this quickly. Our upcoming township meeting, September 1st, is our Board of Supervisors. That'll be online. September 10th is our comprehensive plan meeting. That's online. September 14th is park and recreation. That's online. September 17th is planning commission. That's online. September 22nd is our Board of Supervisors workshop meeting. That's going to be online. And September 28th is our EAC meeting. And that meeting is going to actually have a presentation on on-lot septic systems, which I hope a lot of people attend, because we have a lot of on-lot systems in this township. And I'm sure they're going to have good information to share with residents in this township. And I'm sure it will be advertised on our website and on our Facebook page. So I think that is a great thing that will help a lot of residents.
And Chuck, should we also share that with the regional group?
Sure.
I have one announcement as well. I want to remind everybody, a lot of you probably received this postcard or you saw it on the back of your sewage bill. It's to do the survey for the comprehensive plan. This is an unpaid announcement. I'm not on the comprehensive plan committee, but I did address a bunch of these postcards. So if you want to have your say, please fill it out. If you don't know where it is or can't find it or recycled it, information's on the website and on the Facebook page.
Great.
And please
Thank
tell
you,
all your
Marla.
Friends and neighbors too, the more the merrier.
Okay, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Also move.
I will second.
Marla makes a motion. Noel seconds. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Great. Good night.
Aye. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.